The Market Musings Podcast. Well, welcome here onto the Market Musings Podcast from Stopbox, where today we're joined by David Lenegas, of course, the Executive Chairman of Vynance PLC, who we speak to quite a bit over on Stopbox there. And Alan Green is joining us today as well as co-host on this podcast. Well, welcome to you both. David, first of all, how are you? How are things?
Yeah, hi, Mark. Hi, Alan. Good to speaking today on the pros and cons of Bitcoin cryptocurrency.
Indeed. And Alan, how are you?
I'm good, thank you, Mark. David and I were just comparing notes on the weather. Apparently, it's chucking it down there in Monaco. So you know, weather more akin to the stuff we used to, Mark.
Yes, probably. What's it you said to me, David, that you go to Monaco rich and you leave poor or something?
No. One of the originals, one of the sayings about a lot of people, particularly English people who come to Monaco, is you arrive in a Rolls Royce and leave in a Mini. So the best thing in Monaco is keep your head down, do your work, and don't do business with other people.
That was it. Well, I'm looking forward to this podcast because, of course, I know you were on a podcast before a few months ago. We obviously talked a lot more about you and your background and where you've come from, but really want to focus this podcast on crypto and the Bitcoin price, of course, with the halving, which is coming up, well, circa 10 days' time, isn't it? Quite soon, really.
You know, it's not far away. I mean, the estimate is around about the 22nd of April you're getting the halving, where 900 Bitcoin a day drops to about 450 Bitcoin a day available for the Bitcoin miners through their pools to get access to. So it's a fairly significant event. I mean, if you look at the halving historically, the halvings historically, you've seen anything from an 8x to 10x rise in Bitcoin between the halvings. I mean, you're now talking Bitcoin at $70,000. Yeah, if the same historic events happen, you could be talking Bitcoin, you know, in the $500,000 to $700,000 mark sometime in the next 3, 4, 5 years. But you know, there's been a dramatic change even in the sentiment, because the U.S. government SEC has approved real time ETF one for one Bitcoin trading in the States, which has added, you know, quite a lot of extra demand into the system. So demand is definitely exceeding supply. Okay. And then, you know, around about the 22nd, when the Bitcoin halving happens, you still have the same amount of demand, but the supply is halved.
And has it always been the case then that halving has basically been a catalyst event to see a new almost baseline higher value?
Well, historically, yes, it has. You know, you get fluctuations up and down, you know, either side of it and all the way through the cycle. But historically, you know, you see an 8 to 10x increase in the Bitcoin price.
Over what?
Reading somewhere the other day that the Bitcoin market cap is now like the equivalent of the third or fourth biggest company in the world. It's even bigger now in value than the silver market. And I saw something the other day that big fund managers are now calling the valuation of Bitcoin potentially by the end of this year at in excess of $5 trillion.
Wow.
Which makes it bigger than any listed company on planet Earth.
That's staggering, isn't it?
But is that realistic then?
I can't see why not. Even Jamie Dimon, you know, the boss of JP Morgan, who's been a crypto skeptic, said that in his view, he's looking at, you know, not that he says he'll own any crypto personally, but you know, he says he's looking at revising his forecast for when Bitcoin could be $1 million, you know, forward. Mm.
Well, didn't you make a public call? What was your public call? I want to say $500,000, but I can't remember exactly what you said.
Look, I can realistically see Bitcoin doubling from here this year, and beyond that, you know, let's see where it goes. But there's a lot more transparency sort of floating around with people using Bitcoin to pay for things right now.
Yeah,
the banking system is really starting to hemorrhage. All the banking, all fiat currencies, US dollar, euros, GBP, all they are is promissory notes.
Mm.
It's a credit, you know, on the basis that someone will probably honor the contract on the other side. The interesting thing about Bitcoin is it's a real hard asset that is uncorruptible. It's certainly gathering a lot of pace with respect to people paying stuff. I mean, I pay for stuff now with Bitcoin, and it's instant. It's phenomenal.
But this is interesting. It's what is driving the price there. You know, is it purely as a speculative risk asset? Because you've got gold at the all-time high,
So Mark Fink, who runs BlackRock, the world's biggest fund, says in his view, once the ETF was launched, that Bitcoin ETF is now just another asset class, just like gold. Right? So when you've got global fund managers buying Bitcoin ETFs through BlackRock and through Grayscale and through the other big organizations that are now approved by the SEC as just another asset class, it changes the whole concept and the credibility of Bitcoin as a currency.
Sure.
That's changed forever now. And now you've got the British government, through the FCA, literally highlighting, 3 weeks ago and 2 weeks ago with their new guidance papers that they would like to set up ETNs here, not ETFs, electronic traded funds versus electronic traded notes. But the notes here that the LSE is proposing have to be back-to-back with real Bitcoin. So for some reason, London is calling them ETNs and the US is calling them ETFs. So you're seeing also a dramatic change here in London through the regulators, probably for fear of missing out. I mean, what America's done, I think, is really smart because, one of the biggest criticisms is it's all hot black money, drugs and guns and the black arts are all using cryptocurrency. The majority of global fraud and nastiness is done in US dollars, always has been, right? So to sit there and blame Bitcoin as the dark art of funding the world's illicit and illegal activities is a little bit sort of disingenuous. But it's certainly gathering a lot of pace.
Well, that news from the stock exchange Alan, I'll just finish on this point and then I know you're eager to get in. That's 8th of April. The applications could actually be started on the 8th of April. We're recording this on the 9th of April. So, in theory, applications could start from yesterday and they want start.
It's interesting
too.
We've spoken to a number of big players in the United States in this space. I'm not going to mention names, right? But the timeline that the British government has given for the big players in this space to even put together a legal response is far too short. Now, their view is you might get some key European players looking to jump the channel, but they're quite unsophisticated in the way they approach things. And I really don't think that people have got time to put in an articulate response to the FCA for an LSE ETN in the timeframe that they've proposed. But it's certainly a sign that things are changing. And I also think that if you look at the SEC scenario, by making ETFs physically possible, the US government is now formularizing a tax base on taxing people's profits and revenues with respect to crypto in the United States.
Sure.
Right? Yeah. That's a big, big thing for credibility. And governments can now say, well, I'm winning now out of this whole crypto scenario. It's not people are shuffling money around and I'm not getting my fair share. So, you're now seeing the British government going, well, I want to be part of that scenario too. Every government's chasing tax dollars. So rather than have people trading, Bitcoin and Ether and all those sorts of things in the crypto sphere and not having a part of it, by legalizing it with ETFs and ETNs through the regulators, the British government, the American government, the EU will all be able to claim tax.
Sure.
It's a phenomenal change.
David, we were talking to Malcolm Pelle a few weeks ago about his views on the crypto space and also the other coins, of course, Ethereum and some of the upcoming coins. I think the second layer coins that have enjoyed some spectacular success. Where do you see the crypto space evolving? Do you see Ethereum achieving the same level of credibility and attracting the likes of BlackRock and others, or is this an exclusive? Is this exclusively about Bitcoin?
Look, Bitcoin was the only one to start with because it's real and it's a coin. The rest aren't coins; they're concepts, right? Ethereum is probably highly regarded, and it's more about the blockchain, and it's sort of separated itself somewhat in the last few months as it's restructured itself away from, you know, the Bitcoinness of itself. But Solana, all those other, you know, alternative cryptocurrency, you know, are becoming real, you know, and as part of our whole approach, we're putting a proportion of our Bitcoin holding into second tier, because historically, you know, you get slightly better returns in things like Ethereum on a percentage basis and Solana and a few other things. So we're diversifying a small part of our portfolio into the broader, you know, crypto sphere.
Sure. So effectively, Bitcoin is FTSE 100 and Ether and the others are 52, 53, 50. That's
correct.
Okay.
And I also think that, you know, at the moment we're talking Bitcoin ETFs, you know, from a real perspective in the States. Wait till they start derivatizing a lot of these things. At the moment, it's a one-for-one physical. So if, you know, hedge fund A says, I want to buy $1 billion worth of, you know, BlackRock ETFs in Bitcoin, then BlackRock then goes step into the market and buy $1 billion worth of Bitcoin, right? It's a one-for-one. Wait till they start offering leverage and derivatives against this. And there is a lot of discussion about how long this is going to take to happen. Then you're going to see wild, wild fluctuations and a lot more money and leverage stepping into this crypto market.
Well, then it gets crazy, doesn't it?
Yeah, and it's going to take a while. You talk gold, there's derivatives in gold, there's margins on gold, there's leverage on gold. It's just another asset class, and the bankers will all work out how to maximize
profit from it.
Products.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you mentioned silver before, and of course, we all know how out of whack the silver price is really on the paper front there. You can definitely see this coming down the pipe. I mean, in terms of Binance's sort of approach to this, then it's really, you know, from when we've done our interviews, it's all about getting as many miners spinning as you can, really, before that halving. So, I mean, where are you up to at the moment with the amount of miners spinning?
We'd like to have more miners spinning, but, you know, we're learning as we go. We're trying to stay, you know, as opposed to Argo blockchain, God bless them, we want to stay completely debt-free, which we are. We're understanding the market, the expandability of what we've got. We're certainly running very profitably from what we've got. I think our operating cost is sort of sub $15,000 a Bitcoin. We think that baseline cost is achievable as we scale up. But really, our main focus is to get ourselves known in the United States now. I would rather spend some of the company's money in brand awareness of what we're doing as a listed entity now that we have the OTC listing, OTCQB listing, and we're working towards DTC eligibility. And once we get DTC eligibility, then we open ourselves up to every electronic trading platform in the United States automatically. At the moment, it's very difficult to trade Binance on the OTCQB. There's only a small number of market makers, but DTC eligibility, which should be in the coming days, we hope really opens us up. So, and you've got the halving coming on around the 22nd of April. So there is a team of Binance people, including myself, going to be in New York that week, working with OTC markets people, getting the story out. There's a number of crypto conferences that we'll be presenting at. It's time to get our story out there. And yeah, we would like to obviously raise more fresh equity out of the States as we grow. And you know, that money will all go into expanding our Bitcoin mining fleet. You know, right now on the Bitcoin fleet, we're waiting for our first S21 miners to arrive from China. Apparently they're in customs in Canada at the moment. We're waiting for them to be cleared. And they're stonking pieces of kit. I mean, they're 200 terahash per second miners, the Bitmain Ant Miner S21. They're about the fastest Bitcoin miners in the world today. Our current fleet are 104 to 100 terahash per second. This new lot that we've got coming in will bring us, start bringing us into the 200 terahash. And we're talking to our Bitcoin machine miner providers. There's a S21 Pro coming out in Q3 this year, which looks like it's going to be rated at 240 terahash per second. So we've just asked, what do we need to do to secure 100 of those machines for Q3 delivery? Sure. Because to stay in front of the curve and remain a low quartile cost producer, you want to continually upgrade your fleet.
David, just you mentioned Argo just there, and of course Argo really was kind of the first iteration of a listed company achieving initially spectacular success off the back of Bitcoin, but of course it acquired its debt levels as a result of the crash in Bitcoin first time around.
There's two aspects, Alan. Yeah. It was a combination of things. They were building big data centers in Texas, hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah. Huge overheads.
Lots of employees. Yes, they got miners. The cost of money went through the roof. Forgetting about cost of living for individuals, cost of money for corporates went even higher as a percentage. So, they had borrowed quite a lot of money to expand the facilities that they were building in Texas.
Yeah.
And they had to sell it. And they sold it to a vulture fund. And the vulture fund, didn't completely clean off their debt. And they're still suffering from a big debt book.
Sure, sure.
But, they had to sell off the gold and jewels, which is what they were doing because the cost of money was too high.
Yeah, yeah.
And their employee level was very high as well. I mean, we speak to the Argo lads. And the ex-Argo lads, they went into debt because they tried to expand too quickly, and the cost of money really hurt them. And the Bitcoin price, it is volatile, dropped a bit, and it doesn't take much for people who have leveraged debt to run at a loss.
Sure.
And that's one of the main issues with this halving. A lot of people who have Bitcoin miners pay for their monthly operating cost with either Bitcoin or with debt. So when the halving happens, each miner will produce technically half as much Bitcoin as it's producing today. The power costs are still the same.
Yeah.
The admin daily maintenance costs are still the same, and a lot of Bitcoin miners will actually become unprofitable the day after the halving. And these data centers are ruthless. If you don't pay your monthly cash call, either with Bitcoin or whatever your contract allows, or cash, then they will shut you off. They will just turn your machines off.
Sure, sure. So, following on from that, I guess my next question to you is, given that scenario, given that outlook, and given what happened to Argo previously, you're debt-free, which is fantastic. What safeguards or what steps do you think you need to take looking into the future to ensure that if there is the halving happens, if there is a subsequent crash in Bitcoin again or greater volatility, what safeguards have you got in place to
guard against? No debt is our key mantra, and keep our operating costs very low. We run our entire company with three people.
Cool, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think we're a very efficient group of three people that's singularly focused on running in the lowest quartile cost scenario. We pay cash on a monthly basis for our operating cost, and we want to keep building our Bitcoin up in the wallet because we see Bitcoin, you know, ultimately going to $1 million a coin, whether it's in 2, 3, 4, 5, or 10 years' time. So we're in the provider, we're in the business of hoarding Bitcoin.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And we would prefer to pay cash to our data center providers than use leverage debt or some of our Bitcoin to pay. So that's our model.
Got it.
And then that model is eminently expandable. The, you know, speaking to the corporates that we speak to, speaking to the Bitcoin ETF guys in the States, that's a good model and very expandable. So we're the other side of a hedge. You know, if you're a hedge fund, you trade your ETFs, but you still need the ability to have the Bitcoin as so we're an interesting target for a hedge fund.
Got it. Got it. Yep. Understand. I know you've also got a background in mining too, David, and obviously involved with the Sonora Lithium project some years back and all the rest of it.
Yep.
Carl Friel, of course, of hVIVO success, Paul Begg Pharma, Cove Energy, Amret Pharma, launched European Green Transition yesterday. And he was saying, there was a webinar last night, he was saying exactly the same as you. They've got three people employed full-time by the company on very modest salaries. And that's his model. It's, you know, so I'm really... really pleased to hear you say that, because I think that's the key going forward.
Our model is keep it lean. We pay ourselves £3,000 a month.
Yeah,
we've had a small pay rise. As the year has gone on, we haven't even been listed for a year yet. I mean, we listed on the 21st of April last year, and our pay rise is actually being paid in partial Bitcoin. Yeah. So I now have a wallet that's collecting small amounts of Bitcoin. I'm quite chuffed with that. the mayor of Florida, his entire pay is in Bitcoin.
Yeah. I think it's a great way, as you say, you know.
And in my Revolut wallet, Alan, I can switch my Bitcoin to GBP or US dollars or euros in nanoseconds. My wife said to me, she said, look, I'll send you £1,000. Can you buy me £1,000 worth of Bitcoin? So at least we've got something to talk about while we're watching telly in the evening. Right? So I said, hang on. I said, I'll buy you £1,000 worth of Bitcoin now, and it sits in my wallet, and that's yours, and you can pay me back the £1,000 later. And literally in microseconds on Revolut, I acquired £1,000 worth of Bitcoin that sits in the wallet under Lucy's Bitcoin. And I can switch that back to GBT, just GBP, British pounds, just as quick. It's phenomenal.
Excellent.
And with Revolut, you know, you've got your credit card. You can now, Bitcoin to me is just like any other money. I can tap and pay with my Revolut card. I can, you know, either have it sitting in GBP, US dollars, or Bitcoin, or Ethereum, sitting in my wallet. It's phenomenal.
That's great to hear. And I'll have to do that with Mrs. G. Get a Revolut wallet, and when we're in the middle of watching Mad Men or whatever she insists on watching at the moment.
Alan, I've just got a message from a mate of mine. This is the guy who won the World Cup for the Qataris, right?
Yeah.
Very well-heeled financial guy. He says, I've just paid my Miele France for a dishwasher repair of €165. My private internet bank wanted the reason for payment and a copy of the invoice. Right? He goes, on the basis of this, I've predicted the death of high street retail banking for years. Now I know the neobanks will also not last if they have this level of nonsense.
Yeah,
it won't be long before seamless and immediate crypto payments take over forever.
Peer to peer. Who? What bank? You say neobanks? You mean the challenger banks?
Well, neos are the sort of the internet type banks.
Challengers, yeah. Tide and
Tide, even
Monzo,
Rebel,
yeah,
Rebel.
Starling,
but
yeah,
the buy doesn't
without,
do
without the high street. Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
I agree.
Tide and Wise refuse to do crypto. P3, they do crypto, Privat 3, but it's the whole back office regulatory. And as I said, the guy had to present his last will and testament to, and you know, to do a melee payment to repair his dishwasher.
It's ridiculous. Yeah,
That's crazy.
Isn't it? Yeah, it is.
No, but that absolutely resonates. I mean, I've got a NatWest account, I think, and you have this archaic machine if you set up a new payee on the account, which is
those stupid calculator things. Yeah, they are ridiculous.
I mean, that's circa 90s technology. You know, it's crazy. I think you're absolutely right. The old high street banks are dead and buried. But
have a place. And even I was critical of Bitcoin, you know, a year ago, and I just said, well, look, there's an opportunity here to float something that's a bit different to what Argo are, and make sure we stay away from leveraged debt. Because I think that's what sort of really affected Argo's ability to perform. And Jeremy Edelman, who's my co-director, is a very good ex-banker, and we've sort of put together this model for Binance. You know, Aquis is not the most liquid market. That's why we're sort of pushing on the OTC QB. Mm. You know, we'll get DTC eligibility within days, we hope. And then, you know, we'll be promoting what we do in North America, and hopefully that will drive some volume into the share trading. We're also looking very actively at Frankfurt. You know, we have a Frankfurt scenario that we can push and adopt right now, but I think our prime focus should be the US, because that's where most of our activity is in North America. But how much money do you spend of the company's capital reserves in promote the, you know, building a business? So that's also the other angle that we have to be mindful of.
Well, there's a couple of points there that I want to sort of pick up on, David. Of course, it's the pushing over in the United States, but ultimately, what's the big ambition for the company? You want to keep stacking Bitcoin, as you say. What is the investment case for investors to consider? Is it capital growth? Is it protection
capital
to
growth.
Speculation? To it's capital growth, dividends at some
capital
point,
growth
or mostly capital
payments.
Growth?
Capital growth and dividend payments.
Right.
And I think, you know, with the way we're structuring this, I mean, the board talk regularly about making sure what we create going forward is eminently takeoverable, as a counter and an addition to a hedge fund. You know, we're the other side of the hedge. So create a scalable model that the US fund managers can go, do you know what? This looks like a good acquisition. We want to build this into a £1 billion company. And it's scalable. It just requires the right amount of institutional financing as we grow for people who want to share that vision. But, you know, you need retail to get you to institutional investment level. And that's why you've got to focus on getting retail engaged in where you're at. Yeah. And it's difficult for people to trade Aquis.
Yes, it is. But the ultimate goal there, you've just said, is to get to a billion dollar company.
Well, we'd like to. I mean, I've had some $1 billion companies in the past, and I can't see why this couldn't be one. And I'm a very big shareholder in it. I'm a founder of it. I'm locked in. I continue to be locked in. And when the opportunity arises, I buy a bit more. So, this to me is something I'm very passionate about. And I think from my perspective, in a 3 to 5 year exit strategy, we could grow this, you know, provided the Bitcoin and the crypto markets continue to perform and governments continue to regulate positively. I can't see why we can't build this into a monster.
Alan, sorry.
Mark. I just wanted to go back to what we were talking about a little earlier about the banks and about how hopelessly out of date they are. We also spoke last time, Mark, with Malcolm about tokenization and how that's going to affect assets in the city, you know, stocks and shares and everything else. Could you ever envisage a time where you'd be paying, for instance, dividends when Binance gets to that point, dividends in Bitcoin, David?
Absolutely. That was one of Jeremy's and my original points of view. let's go and build this thing so big that our dividend is, you know, you can either get it in cash or in Bitcoin. Why not?
I think that would really, that to me, that's what also.
But there's still a mindset block for a lot of banks in the UK. I mean, if I said I'm going to pay dividends in Bitcoin and you took, okay, so Alan, you go, well, here's my wallet. Well, okay. And the bank finds out, all of a sudden your account's frozen.
Sure, yeah.
Right now, until the FCA adopt a policy that crypto or certain parts of the crypto sphere, i.e. Bitcoin, are legal in all senses, then banks and back office corporate compliance and risk will make it almost impossible for people to hold cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
So you need that mindset change with the regulators. You know, the America has beaten everybody to it through the SEC. You know, the head of the SEC was brought to the table kicking and screaming, but he allowed the ETFs to occur. You know, people don't realize there's been $40 billion US plus invested from institutional players into the US ETF instruments in the last 4 to 6 weeks.
Jeez. Well,
they reckon if BlackRock keep acquiring Bitcoin at its current pace, by August, BlackRock will own 1 million Bitcoin. That's $70 billion. Now, there's only 19.6 million Bitcoin in the world today. That will ultimately go to 21 million.
Mm.
They're pretty substantial numbers.
Sure. Just back on tokenization, Dave. We were talking about Valeria and blockchain the other week, and the implications that has for the entire financial services industry. And I think the point you made just now about the banks freezing everything because they've got compliance and settlement teams behind the scene, putting blocks and stuff. Once, say, Binance shares become tokenized.
I can tell you right now, that is one of my absolute stalking horses.
Yeah.
Is I am talking to consultants about being one of the first in the world, particularly in the UK, but we're looking at all the regulatory side of tokenizing Binance shares so that the cryptosphere can buy into Binance. Yeah. Through the crypto market versus the fiat hard currency market. And it is a possibility to do through Switzerland, fully secured. And I'm looking at that really hard.
Okay.
Through a consulting group in the UK who specialize in this stuff. So I can see if everything, if possible, I would like to see the crypto world being able to buy Binance shares through cryptosphere, through tokens. Absolutely.
Mm. And, of course, that would make paying dividends in Bitcoin, it would take a nanosecond to do it, wouldn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it'll all be done through the blockchain.
Yeah.
The best ledger in the world.
Goodness. Indeed, I mean that would be pretty quite something if you can get to that point, David. That would be really quite something. Are you?
Well, I could do it within a couple of. I think I can do it within 2 to 3 months. The issue is we're sucked of staff bandwidth, right? So right now we are focusing on a US roadshow, OTC markets, DTC. Taking our market maker. Allocation from 3 market makers in the States to 30 or 40 or 50 market makers over the course of the next month or two. I just don't have the bandwidth at the management to go and focus on Frankfurt, tokenization of the Binance shares and all those sorts of things. And I don't want to staff up because, staffing up is very difficult to staff down when you get a downturn.
Indeed.
Sure.
Indeed. And you mentioned that roadshow then. That's the focus for the next few weeks anyway. Can you give us a bit more of an idea?
Here in the end of April, and then
okay.
first week in May, there's a monstrous crypto conference down in Las Vegas. I won't be going to that, but one of our team will be.
Okay, okay. So what's the objective of the roadshow? I mean, you've mentioned the DTC.
Well, the roadshow is to tell America that we exist.
Okay.
With the DTC eligibility getting approved very shortly, that will expand our market makers and allow pretty much every platform in the United States and globally, like your interactive brokers, to trade Binance in US dollars through okay. the OTCQB.
So you get that trading. DTC, and that means you can then trade through the OTC markets.
Yeah, but it means that we'll be online through all of the platforms.
Right.
At the okay. moment, yeah. if you want to buy Binance, it's ring and your broker
okay.
will hopefully buy by appointment, and you will get screwed on commission.
Sure.
Whereas if we get DTC eligibility shortly, then all the online platforms work,
okay.
and then you know, E-Trade and Charles Schwab and all those things will do your trade for £6.75 a share or something,
okay,
or £6.75
okay.
a trade or whatever they advertise at.
Mm-hmm.
But it means that we'll be open to electronic trading in US dollars throughout the entire US platform.
Okay, okay. And were you looking to potentially get a NASDAQ listing at some point?
Yeah, I mean, that's ultimately the step, is to graduate from OTCQB to QX and then to NASDAQ.
Right, okay.
Yeah absolutely. Now,
okay.
it'll take a while because, you know, there's a lot of legals with respect to that. We've been doing a lot of discussions and mm-hmm. talk about that. And there's some institutional players that would like to, explore that with us as we go forward. But, you know, as I said, yeah, right now we've sort of got limited bandwidth for the management perspective.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, I mean, this roadshow then, is it sort of, would you anticipate to see volumes perhaps pick up in the trading of Binance shares over the next sort of few weeks?
Well, I hope so.
That would be what you want. That's really what you want to come out with, I suppose, isn't it? Increase the volume. Look, tell the United
the
States we're here.
The market will reward you with market share activity when you perform, and that's about news releases, it's about demonstrating growth, it's about demonstrating scalability, it's about recognition that your brand as a public traded company exists. You know, it's not an easy thing to do, but that's where management wants to focus life.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. Good. Good stuff. That's- Alan, do you have any other thoughts?
Yeah, just one thought I had. I mean, you've just said, David, you're talking with NASDAQ, but of course you've got to go through the hoops and various other bits and pieces. Really, in a tokenized world, there's almost no need for a stock exchange, is there? Because you've then got everything tokenized.
Well,
so
I don't think that I agree with you in time, but the moment you start talking about removing stock exchanges and removing the ability to have fiat currencies like the US dollar or the GBP, you're talking about the disintegration of governments and borders.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a bite too far
for
the apple
far.
Right now.
Step too far at this point. Okay.
Absolutely. I mean, you'll end up with world chaos and anarchy. So, you know, the world needs social order.
Yeah.
The big issue for real currencies is the amount of debt that continues to climb, and the fact that it really is credit and a promissory note. You know, the world. Yeah. You know, I remember driving through New York, you know, when I was running Lonro, and there's this big ticker symbol, you know, on the way to Wall Street that had the rolling US current debt was $17 trillion. You know, and these numbers were so long, and they're just calculating and moving, you know, every tenth of a second.
Mm.
You know, the US debt's now $31 trillion. You know, the British government debt's now £2 trillion. You know, what's the ability of these governments to actually, you know?
Yeah, they'll just kick the can down the road, won't they? That's all
right.
They can do.
That's why there's the whole concept of Bitcoin's becoming more and more real. But what's made it absolutely real is the SEC have agreed one-for-one ETFs which now means that they can keep an eye on corporate America who are trading Bitcoin and have their share of the profit and loss.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the big thing that's changed the landscape. And I find that really exciting because that creates much more demand than what we've seen in the last, you know, four Bitcoin halvings, you know, naturally through the what's principally been the locked-in crypto world.
It's complete validation for the asset class, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised even in my own life, how I can move pounds or US dollars to Bitcoin and then move it back again and physically use it to pay for things. You know, try and smuggle a 30-ounce gold bar through, you know, customs into Frankfurt or whatever on a British Airways flight. You know, the beepers will go off everywhere. But, you know, with your wallet that's on your phone, I mean, that really is cross-border.
I have a story about that. I mean, gold is VAT-free, so there should never be any questions at the border. But unfortunately, the border, people don't really understand that. But I did travel across a border, went to the United Kingdom with a lot of silver, which, to be fair, did have VAT duty needed to be paid on it. I just wasn't aware of it. And before I left the Netherlands, surrounded by Dutch Marechaussee and the United Kingdom border people, they asked me lots of questions, inquiring what other wealth I may have with me. And they said, what cash do you have? I said, no. Do you have any other things of high value? I said, well, do you include crypto? I've got my ledger with me. And they said, no. I said, well, you might do one day. Because they had quite a lot in my ledger at the time. But they were more interested in the silver bars that were worth a lot less, actually. perhaps it was more obvious. I don't know.
There seems to be a big delinking of gold price v silver price.
Yeah,
it's just not tracking anymore. I don't know why. Maybe there's too much debt within the silver market. I've got no idea.
I think there's too much paper market. I read somewhere a while ago, I keep coming back to this, that even if every single paper contract for silver that's out there stood to take physical delivery, there is not enough silver in the world mined or currently 20 times always, over.
Yeah, and there's very big short positions in silver all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas I think, and the other reason that gold continues to rise, and I was reading something this morning, is the amount of central bank buying.
Yeah.
And that's also, what I heard. Central banks.
Banks continue to buy gold, and that's what's creating a quite robust.
Western central banks?
Well, China's been
all you know, U.S.
Yeah. All of them.
Everything. China. All of the central banks buy. I was with the ex-head of the World Gold Council a month ago, and he just said, you know, this started really about a year ago with central banks buying back into gold, and they can just see it continuing for quite some years to come.
Why are they? I can see why perhaps, you know, the East banks would be doing it. Why are Western banks buying back? What's the theory there?
It's just supporting the fact that they need something to support their currency and their debt.
Yeah. Right, so they've realized that, they need a hard asset to back it.
Yeah.
Which always used to be the case.
Yeah. Macro uncertainty. I mean, and also China's been buying every month, 17 consecutive months on Gold Telegraph yesterday. You know, China's been adding. So, it's that, but it's also the macro uncertainty too, I think. You know, we've got.
But I mean, Zimbabwe's got this new currency that's backed by gold. They announced it last week.
Yeah, I saw that.
Hey, so we've got plenty of gold to cover it. I mean, God. Zimbabwe's a basket case financially at the moment,
I can't believe gold. I watch it every day. All time highs again, up another percent today. 2364. It's at, and I can see gold
going to 3,000. It's been threatening for a while, and there's going to be a good run in gold exploration juniors. It always lags.
Well, it
gold
will have price. To come down. Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's actually broken out there, hasn't it? If you look at it from a charting standpoint.
No, it's broken right out. But what you need is the exploration mums and pups and the you need that lower end of the exploration market to move, and then you know that we've got a real gold rally going, right? So you've got a gold physical rally going, but you don't have an exploration and production.
Yeah, so watch the junior
rally on the market.
Yeah, yeah. Load up on
and
the
I
juniors.
Think copper is also sort of lagging behind, but I see gold and copper really sort of moving. It's a bit.
I think.
Yeah, I read this morning the Oracle Power News release on that deal they've done in on Blue Rocks in Western Australia. The phenomenal gold and copper grades there. Sooner or later you'll see it. The gold run translate to the mining juniors, and money will start circulating through the system again.
I think that's where you want to put your money. I mean, I often buy gold sovereigns, but I'm just finding it very difficult to buy them at the minute with gold at all-time highs. It's like I don't want to do it, but it could just keep going and going. But probably your better bet is to put them in the juniors, like you say, the juniors that have got good gold projects near-term cash flow.
You know, Mark, you buy in the stock market, it's a gamble. It's like rolling the dice. You could end up at least if you buy a sovereign, it's still worth something.
Yeah, you've got that physical asset, haven't you?
So buying in the stock market is a gamble, always has been. How many blue chip companies have gone bankrupt? Remember Enron? Remember Northern Rock?
Remember Thomas Cook?
Remember Tom? Absolutely. Blue chip companies gone. Pension funds destroyed. Any share is a punt.
Maybe I should just continue buying myself.
And that's why Bitcoin is an interesting concept, because Bitcoin is a real thing. People don't believe it's a real thing, but when you got it in your wallet, you can buy stuff with it. It's a thing.
It's a real thing.
Correct.
It certainly is real as sterling or dollar. Yeah, for sure.
Well, thank you very much, David and Alan, for your time today. Interesting discussion. And good luck next week, in the next few weeks in the States.
In the States from the 22nd.
Oh, from the 22nd. Okay, so around the halving time. Well, I'm sure we'll be speaking perhaps.
Well, that's the plan, is to be in the States in the halving, because there'll be a lot of chit-chat around it. And we want to be there sort of in the thick of it. And OTC has a crypto conference, a digital asset conference, on the 25th. So we'll be there for that as well.
Excellent. Yeah. Okay. Well, hopefully.
Thank you, David. Really good.
All right, Alan. Good to speak to you. Good.
Thank
Mark.
You.
Speak to you again, and then let's talk again shortly.
Indeed. Thank you. Thank you, everyone.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to another podcast from Market Musings. Tune in next time.